You're listening to Bits of Me, the podcast about women's bodies, all the things we should know about them, and all the stories behind them. This week, I've got two guests on the podcast. Aoife Francis and Fiona Duncan are old friends, and last year they decided to launch a zine about pregnancy, loss, birth, and beyond. We talk about their own experiences of all of the above and how they supported each other while going through fundamentally different but difficult times. With Aoife having had a surprise pregnancy and struggling with early motherhood, while Fiona experienced two pregnancy losses. Their zine, Waters in the Wild, was an attempt to reflect that multitude of experiences, to contribute to a shared understanding of fertility issues and motherhood, and to reclaim the narratives of our bodies. I also want to thank all the Bits of Me patrons, of course, for being part of this project and helping to keep it going. Anyone who is able to contribute with €2 a month or more can do so via patreon.com/bitsofme. So let's start in April 2019. Aoife, do you want to tell me what happened?
Yeah, we were coming back from Fiona's hen party, which, yeah, we rented this private island off Mayo, and there were like nearly 30 of us. Wow. Yeah, I had been like due my period before we left, and I had all these cramps, and I was saying, please come, because there's a hot tub. I just want to get my period over with before I go away and party for the weekend. But I just kept getting pains on and off, and it never came. And I think we kind of lightly discussed it, like on the train back. Fiona had a friend who had kind of a surprise pregnancy, and she was talking about all the ins and outs of the labour and all the horror she'd gone through. And we were kind of joking, saying, God, yeah, maybe that's it. But it wasn't for, I think, the next day in between meetings. I was like, God, maybe I'll just take a pregnancy test just in case, but that would be mad. And yet, straight away, turns out I was like 7 weeks gone or something like that. And I just hadn't noticed, hadn't planned for it at all. So that was it, really. It was a shock. I had been using kind of this fertility app since the November to try and not get pregnant because I had been on the pill for 10 years and I was just really sick of it. It gave me loads of side effects, and I just kind of said to my partner, look, we don't want to have a baby right now, but that would be not the worst case scenario. It's better than being in pain and having this pill that I really don't like for another few years. So, but it was still really, really surprising, and I didn't have a lot of friends. I don't think I had any friends really that had babies. Kind of distance acquaintances, but none of my good friends and none of my family. I have one sister. So I think it felt quite surreal. And I just kind of focused on the pregnancy for the whole time. I didn't really think about the baby, which maybe a lot of people do. I'm not sure. Maybe when it's a surprise and you haven't been planning for it. But every week and every month, I was just doing more and more research on the pregnancy, being like, what is this feeling? What is happening now? What does this mean? And I felt like a bit of a fraud because I joined this pregnancy group online, which is amazing, and they've been a great form of support, especially with lockdown. But they, like a lot of them, had done loads of research, or they'd been trying, or they'd been doing IVF, or they, you know, they'd gone through this whole journey. I think I might have been the only one that was like, whoops. So I felt very like fraudulent. I felt like I was always catching up. Like, you know, I felt guilty that I didn't know more and I wasn't reading more, but I was just tired all the time and I just was kind of trying to get through. So my daughter was born in January 4th, Lani. And it was not a good experience, really, in terms of labour. I'm conscious that Fiona is due her baby any minute, so I don't want to go into it too much.
Yeah, well, without going into all the details, do you know what you had expected? Like, I know you were saying that you were mostly kind of focused on pregnancy and maybe birth, but not so much what happens afterwards, which I actually don't think is very, it's not that uncommon. But what do you think you expected birth to be like?
I think it's kind of strange because I can be a very anxious person and I do tend to doom think a lot of scenarios. But I think there's something primal about being pregnant where your body almost doesn't allow you to do that. Like, now that I know everything that happens and that can happen, I don't know how I would do it again, even though I want to, because I think I would spend all my time Googling it and every feeling and every kick, whereas I had never heard of any of these problems when I was pregnant, and I didn't pay that much attention to the things that can go wrong in birth. So I genuinely wasn't worried about them, which is why it came as such a shock. when it was just very difficult. It went on for a day and a half, and there were just complications with the baby. She wouldn't turn, and my blood pressure kept dropping, and I got the epidural, thank God, which was the greatest thing that ever happened to me.
ever.
Yeah, the baby is second, the epidural is first. But yeah, and I had a lot of, you know, recovery issues. I was in the hospital for almost a week, and I think that's quite a surreal experience, because when you bring the baby home, everybody is just focused on, it sounds so cliche, but they really are just focused on the baby. And they're kind of, people can be well-meaning but quite dismissive of your current state. They're kind of like, you'll feel better in a month, you'll feel better in 3 months. But I think it's very hard to see the wood for the trees in those moments. Like, 1 month seems like 10 years. I mean, I literally thought I was going to have a brand new baby forever. I remember I came home from the hospital and my partner was like, so I've worked out how to use the sterilizer machine. So we put the bottles in here and we put it in here. And my first thought was just, I have to do that every day, multiple times a day. It's not that it was a huge task. It was just the permanency of it. I was like, so this is our lives now, you know, and I felt really kind of like trapped in that for a long time, really a good few months.
So what was the day to day like in those first few weeks and months? Like, you know, when you look back at your initial experience of motherhood, how would you describe it?
It makes me really sad because I feel simultaneously guilty that's my memory. I remember when she was a year old, I tried to write down something good that happened every month for the first few months, because I was thinking like, it couldn't have been all bad. I don't want to think about the time she was born. It's just being this really bleak, dark time. But it was just tough. It was, you know, I felt like she was, you know, a very difficult baby, which is unfair. She was just a baby. When I look back now at my notes, I'm like, she slept all the time. What was I talking about? I used to tell people, she just doesn't sleep. But like, she did sleep for a newborn, you know. But also, I just really didn't ask for help. You know, I'm very kind of, I don't know, organized person, and I like kind of control, and I would find it very hard. I'm usually the helper in situations, you know. I'd find it very hard to actually say to someone, you know, people offered, you know, to help. But I was like, no, it's too much effort, you know, you won't know how to do it right. And then lockdown hit when she was 8 weeks old, so that just made it 10,000 times worse. So we had no break. My partner was in work 10 hours a day, you know, 4 or 5 days a week, and I was just by myself, and it was really, really bleak. I think I didn't leave the house for about 3 weeks. I felt like, as cliched as it is, when you see all the memes on Instagram that says, no one says how hard being a mom is, but really, no one does. I mean, I had my health.
We just keep saying that no one says it.
No one says it. I'm trying to say it. You know, I recovered pretty well, which I'm very lucky. The Coombe were great. They had me in physio really early, and, you know, specialist appointments in Holles Street. And they, you know, it was really, it could have been a lot worse. Now when I Google it, and I'm like, Jesus, I'm glad I didn't know about this when I woke up in the hospital bed. But yeah, it's lonely because, you know, especially trying to keep up with friends who didn't have babies, who meant well and would say, how's the baby? But they had no idea what that meant. So you would just say, she's good, she slept, or she didn't sleep, or she did this, or she didn't do that. And then they'd be talking about their own lives. And like, that's what people do. But I would be like, all I think about is the situation, and I have to pretend when I'm with my friends and I'm thinking about anything else, and I have to wrap it up in a bow and in a text message and in a WhatsApp message, when really I'm like rocking back and forth going, my life has changed completely and nobody else gets it.
So speaking of catching up with friends and trying to relate and all that, Fiona, you were going through something very different at this time. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I was. So I basically found out I was pregnant in January 2020. I'm losing track of dates. and then, yeah, found out at 11 weeks that I'd had a miscarriage. So basically I was coming home from a work conference, I was really excited that day. I was in Amsterdam. I was meant to be actually playing a gig for the first time in a long time that night. So I was really looking forward to that. And I was thinking, this is the last hurrah now before I have a baby. I haven't done a gig in years. And then, I was coming through the airport and just got to arrivals and, just saw blood, basically. So just kind of my first instinct, I know that's actually quite common in pregnancy, but my first instinct was actually, no, there's something wrong here. So basically that was at 11 weeks. Found out when we went to kind of my husband collected me from the airport. We went straight to the rotunda. we were waiting for hours. There was like about 10 or 15 couples in the waiting room in the rotunda. Yeah, so just kind of, we were in that waiting room, and I remember just, I was actually quite calm, weirdly texting Aoife actually. Yeah, unfortunately, went in, and the doctor that saw me, I think she was a junior doctor, she kind of said, look, looks fine, we can see her heartbeat. And then she kind of took a few minutes and she was like, actually, hang on. And she grabbed the registrar outside the door, the registrar came in and was like, actually, yeah, there's no heartbeat. So that was a huge shock, just because I suppose we'd been for an early scan at 7 weeks. There was a heartbeat, you know, so to, I suppose to reach that stage and for there to have been a heartbeat and then a miscarriage, I think is quite uncommon from what I've heard. So yeah, so that's, I suppose that was the first miscarriage. But yeah, I suppose we got home, and I think I got through quite well. I'd be very kind of problem solving orientated. So, you know, I was on Google. I was doing everything that you're not meant to do, I suppose, in those situations, but it helped me. And I found lots of resources online. I suppose at the time I didn't know why. I thought, look, could have been a chromosomal thing. But just the fact that we had had that heartbeat at 7 weeks, and then, you know, for that to happen at 11 weeks was quite a shock. And also, I suppose we were planning on telling my parents the next day, actually, that I was pregnant. So we ended up actually, you know, going to visit my family, and we told them that I'd had the miscarriage. So that was horrible. It was also my 30th birthday coming up a few days after that. So it was it was a strange time, but I think, yeah, got through it quite well. Yeah, and then I suppose then in a couple of months after that, got pregnant again. Unfortunately, that ended in a miscarriage at 6 weeks. So I suppose a bit easier to take in the sense that it was so much earlier on. But I guess, you know, the fact that it was happening for the second time, that was quite a lot to take as well.
And were you worried throughout that pregnancy? Like when you found out that you were pregnant, how did you feel?
I don't think I actually was that worried. I think I was very much like, I don't want the first experience to rob me of the kind of the happiness and the joy of it happening again. I think I had quite a positive outlook in that sense. So I wasn't really overly worried, but again, kind of happened the same way. Just a bit of bleeding started, and then I suppose we thought, look, we're not going to go to the rotunda again. You know, it was happening in the evening time on a Friday night again. We kind of knew, look, we're going to end up, like, it's the worst place to be, like, if you're kind of going through that. Well, it's the best place to be and the worst place to be, in a sense. So we felt, look, we'll wait until the next day. Went in the next day, it was really quiet. The pandemic was in full flow at that point, so my husband Owen couldn't come in with me that time. They couldn't confirm the miscarriage initially, but it was clear, like, I was bleeding, like, quite heavily at that point.
Yeah.
For me, like, I think it was quite a shock in the sense that, like, I'd never met anyone who'd had a miscarriage, which is crazy. And I suppose, similarly to Aoife, not many of my friends were kind of at that stage of their life yet, even though it's not that long ago. No one my age that I knew had a miscarriage, which is absolutely crazy. So yeah, it definitely felt, I wouldn't say it felt isolating, but I definitely felt, right, this doesn't feel like a common thing, even though I looked up the stats and I knew, you know, 1 in 4 or 1 in 3, but I think I was thinking, right, I'm quite young. I just turned 30. I know I'm healthy. Like, I, you know, I don't really have any other issues. So they did have a thyroid issue. I had mentioned that to a couple of doctors. Look, I have hypothyroidism. I'd had thyroid cancer a few years before that. Wasn't even a serious thing. They just had to remove half my thyroid. But I suppose I had thyroid antibodies, which according to the bits of research that I had done, kind of skimming medical journals and that kind of thing, it could have actually had an impact on the pregnancies. So yeah, I did mention this to doctors, and they did brush it off, to be honest.
Really?
Yeah, they did. Yeah, no, they really did. And
which is mad, because that is one of those things that people say, that if you have any kind of thyroid issues and you want to get pregnant, or you are pregnant, you need to flag it, because it's something that, you know, it's fine as long as you're aware and people can keep an eye on it. But yeah, that's disappointing to hear that it was brushed off.
Yeah, and like, I suppose the TSH levels, so the actual level of thyroid hormone, seemed to be quite good, because I'd been monitoring that quite, like, I'd been aware of that pre-pregnancy, And I suppose I was keen to monitor that, and that was fine. But the actual antibody level was quite high. So that, yeah, it's kind of a new, kind of emerging area of medical research in relation to the antibodies. But yeah, again, you know, just completely brushed off and look, I completely understand until things are kind of well evidenced and until a good research base has been built up, it is difficult for the medical profession to say, look, this could have impacted on that. But I just think the fact that it was completely brushed aside was very frustrating. So I suppose at that point, after the second miscarriage, just felt, yeah, right, we need to take this a step further. I don't want this to happen again. I was kind of thinking, look, I could go through it happening again. Like, I felt quite strong about it and I felt emotionally maybe able to go through it again. But I was like, look, I'm wasting my time here, possibly.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah, I am young, but at the same time, I don't want to leave myself short in terms of the limited number of years that, that women have to have kids. So, yeah, we ended up going to a private consultant. This was the reason for that was the hospital that I was attending. And I think if this is the case in most maternity hospitals in Ireland, you have to have gone through a miscarriage 3 times and you have to be over the age of 35 to access any investigative care.
Yeah.
Which is absolutely crazy. And according to like the ESHRE, it's the European kind of sexual health reproductive organization, really it's at that second miscarriage that it can be defined as recurrent miscarriage. And that's the point at which people should be looking for investigations. And also by the time you reach 35, you know, you're at that stage where it's a geriatric pregnancy.
Yeah, exactly.
And people are asked, why didn't you start earlier, etc. So like it's crazy, I think. Thankfully, like we had the resources to go privately and see this consultant. And that's what annoyed me. Like we had that capacity to go privately. Other people don't. So anyway, went to this doctor in the Beacon in Dublin and he was great. Yeah, like he was very I think he was just shocked to see probably people so young. I suppose he runs a fertility clinic as well, like as part of it. And to see people so young and to see people that were, again, because we could question it, that we were kind of questioning the advice that we'd been given by the by other doctors, which was just try again, like, you know. So yeah, he did put me on, well, he prescribed medication to go on for the next time I got pregnant. So that was great. That was really reassuring just to know I had that progesterone and aspirin.
And was that related to the antibodies then, or what was his kind of verdict? Or
yeah, so he was, that was actually the thing. Like he was saying, look, you were dead right. There isn't a huge evidence base for this, but there is emerging research in relation to the thyroid antibodies. That even if your thyroid levels are quite good, that the antibodies could have an impact on the developing fetus. So yeah, that was a real like moment of vindication, I suppose, but also just relief to know that actually we had maybe touched on something. I suppose we'll never really know for sure whether that was the case or not. But yeah, just the fact that someone was kind of trusting what I was saying for the first time was great. And I think it's something that myself and Aoife have been doing since we're for years now, is questioning that kind of logic from the medical profession and like absolutely trusting medical people where appropriate and necessary, but just, you know, to always kind of question it and always to have a kind of critical and engaging mind when it comes to it, and, you know, to ask the questions and not to just accept things that doctors say point blank. Do your own research and come to your own conclusions. So yeah, then I ended up getting pregnant again. So that was in late summer 2020. But yeah, like up until that point, like you do become a bit obsessive about it. Like it's,
yeah,
I was saying to Aoife, like, you know, another €20 wasted on pregnancy tests and ovulation kits and all of that stuff. So yeah, it was complete contrast, I suppose, to Aoife's situation where she only had to buy the one pregnancy test and that was it. But yeah, like I was delighted, but again, obviously nervous. But again, like the second time, I didn't want the other experiences to kind of to colour it for me. So yeah, like I was really excited. I remember we were away. This was in the the times when restrictions were a bit eased, we were on holidays and down in Cork, found out a couple of days after that. It felt definitely more hopeful than the other times. And I remember Aoife even saying, like, yeah, no, I'm really hopeful this time. And I'm kind of like, yeah, but sure, like, you know, who knows, it could just end in tears again. But yeah, went on the medication, and thankfully now I am 34 weeks pregnant yesterday. So all good. Baby is measuring 35 weeks actually, so might come early. It's just such a relief now to know that everything is good. And I suppose the experience for me anyway of having the two miscarriages was horrible, obviously, but yeah, there's a lot about we should be grateful for every experience, but I actually kind of agree with that, because it definitely, like, I can understand what other women have gone through with regard to miscarriage. And I think that's why I've always, since I've had them, I've been quite open about it, just because, as I said, I didn't know anyone my age that had had miscarriages. And it is very much seen as something that happens maybe to older women, or it's just not talked about at all. I think definitely for women of every generation, actually, it's just not spoken about. I think things are getting a lot better, but yeah, just to know that people aren't known. And but as I said, the issue is that lack of resources. That the issue is that a lot of people just don't have those resources to access private care, or, you know, to get put on that drug that they think will help. So that's what probably angers me the most about it.
What was it like for the two of you? So you're good friends, obviously, and there's this contrast between your experiences at the same time, where you were finding it quite hard being a new mother, Aoife, and for you, Fiona, having these losses and kind of figuring out your path ahead or whatever. Were you able to support each other and to be completely, like, open and honest with each other throughout of all this, or was that hard?
Yeah, I felt very guilty, like this whole thread of that I had taken it for granted. It had never been difficult for me, and like to get pregnant, obviously I didn't intend it, but also like I felt bad because at moments I wished it hadn't happened, you know, which I think is normal in the first few weeks. I have a really good friend actually who did, you know, we don't get to see each other very often, but she does have a son, and I remember in the first month she messaged me, she's a really direct person, and she was like, it's okay if you regret the whole thing. And I was like, wow, I do. that's a strong statement. But like, you know, that I felt bad that I, at times I almost wished it had, you know, hadn't happened. And like, maybe if I had been more prepared, or it had been something I wanted. Like, I felt very resentful that the situation had happened to me sometimes, which is a horribly dark thing to say. But I do think that is normal. I think that's what a lot of people feel. Yeah. And I think, you know, it's probably the case that whether you really wanted the baby, had IVF, had miscarriages, didn't, got pregnant accidentally like me, I think that feeling is universal. You know, I think it's because of the loneliness, because of the lack of support, and because of the hormones, and because of the the physical healing. I think, like, I hadn't been through trauma or physical pain at all really in my life, a few broken bones when I was a child, but that has a massive impact. It's like having a constant headache and expecting to be your best self. When you're in physical pain, it's very hard to be as generous and calm and, you know, as you'd want to be. So yeah, I think I probably wasn't as open with Fiona, because I felt very tone deaf in the middle of all this to be like, well, my baby won't sleep. But it's like, if your baby doesn't sleep for, which she still doesn't, weeks or months on end, it's like sleep deprivation is a form of torture, you know, and it's very hard. And then I had no support because of lockdown. I wouldn't see anyone all day. But it definitely gave me the other side of the perspective. And I think, you know, in summary, nobody has it worse. Nobody has, everyone's experiences are completely different when it comes to fertility, infertility, children. And I know during lockdown, there was a lot of stuff on Twitter where people who hadn't had children were like, you know, you're giving out about homeschooling, you're giving out about, you know, how you're tired, and that'll end, whereas I'll never have, you know. And I think, like, that kind of discourse isn't really helpful. I think, like, we don't have to be so defensive to each other. You know, it's not helpful for someone who doesn't have children to say, well, you might be tired, but I'll never have it. You know, that isn't really a helpful way to look at things, because saying to people that they have to feel grateful all the time sometimes can minimize the experience of how difficult it actually is to be a mom. And there's no point in saying, well, wouldn't it be worse if you couldn't get pregnant? You know, this whole discourse just isn't helpful. I think we need to be more generous with each other, you know.
Yeah, like I found, like, definitely Aoife was the person that I would be talking to the most about my experiences, and she was great, and we kind of have a shared understanding of a lot of things. And when it comes to frustration around doctors not maybe believing what you're saying or whatever, which is ironic because both my parents are ex-doctors.
Retired. Ex sounds like they were struck off.
But I think maybe that's where my part of my skepticism comes from. It's just, you know, I see doctors as normal people, whereas I think especially in Ireland, we tend to see the medical profession as kind of, you know, the new priests kind of thing. You know, let's just bow down, say yes to what the doctor says, and, you know, let's not question anything they say. But yeah, so I think Aoife kind of had a similar understanding as me. I knew she was obviously finding things tough at the beginning and having to go through your first experience of motherhood during a global pandemic, spending all your maternity leave cooped up in a house. So no, like I don't think I found it hard to see someone with a baby. And it was, as I said, like I'd be very kind of problem solving focused. So I kind of thought, look, this will happen for me at one point. So
let's talk about the zine. Where did the idea come from originally?
My sister, in an effort to calm me down, started getting me to do cacao. She did real cacao, like not the stuff you get in the health shop. She orders it from this woman. She does kind of cacao ceremonies. I think, you know, she doesn't drink or anything, so she finds any kind of mood altering substances really, really, you know, intensive, and she's really into meditation and stuff, and I like all that kind of thing. So I was like, okay, yeah, give some to me and Colin, we'll do it, and my partner will do it on Friday night, and we'll just see, you know. So I found it really good. It's not transformative, you know, you don't start seeing like colors coming out of your hands or anything, but it was kind of interesting to meditate on the last few months. And I think it was kind of coming to the summer, and I just kind of thought, yeah, you know, why don't I kind of put something together? Because like Fiona says, I don't know anyone that's had a miscarriage, which is just like a crazy statement, because of course we do. It's just that they, you know, they're not talking about it because of the taboo. I was thinking, I don't know anyone bar this one friend who messaged me who would ever openly say, you know, this is really, really difficult about motherhood beyond, you know, I'm tired, you know, and you'd see those YouTube kind of videos or memes that come up sometimes, probably because of the algorithm of everything I look at, that are like, instead of washing the dishes, I cuddle you. Instead of doing this, I cuddle you, because you'll be grown up soon. And I'd be like, fuck off, you know, stop with that whole emotive thing, you know. You can be frustrated and wound up and still love your child and be a great mother at the same time, you know. So yeah, I guess the cacao inspired it, and I said, then I thought, God,
are you saying you were high?
A little bit high, yeah, for a Friday night. That was sober for me. But I thought maybe we could do it together, because like you say, I suppose the whole experience of me and then Fiona being my best friend and going through all this really did highlight how it is a spectrum, exactly like you say. From the moment Fiona got pregnant the first time, I saw her as my mother friend, you know, my friend who was a mother, and I didn't have any of those. And it didn't matter that the pregnancy, you know, I don't mean it didn't matter, but whether or not the pregnancy progressed, she was a mother to me, because she, you know, she was already acting like a mother, thinking like a mother, you know. And
yeah,
so I thought it really is a spectrum, like it's massive. And wouldn't it be good, like you say, not to have these polar opposites, which sometimes you see on like crass sites like Twitter, where people are constantly just arguing the other side of, you think you have a bad, I have this, which is just like really, really unhelpful. Not to feel really guilty like I did, that, oh God, I had this accidental pregnancy that I almost don't want right now because I'm feeling so stressed. And then I have a friend who really, really wants a baby and it's not happening for her. So that's kind of where it came from. And Fiona and I had been doing little projects our whole lives. We started out when we were like 20, maybe. We had a little project called Real Productive Health. Someone has stolen that name now, actually, in a different activist organization, but it's fine. If you're listening to this, it's fine. And it was about the morning after pill. So Fiona had done her thesis on the morning after pill and access for her master's in equality studies in UCD. And so we were trying to lobby the Pharmaceutical Society of Ireland and stuff to make the pill over the counter instead. We did that for years. We got pretty far. We got a few things. We actually met with the Pharmaceutical Council of Ireland, and
we even met with like the manufacturers of the main morning after pill brand in Ireland. And like, he was like, pretending to take this really seriously. But yeah, and it was also around like conscientious objection.
Yeah.
So pharmacists can still actually conscientiously object to provision of the morning after pill, which is absolutely crazy. So yeah, and then we had like a map on the website which showed people where the morning after pill was available in their area.
Yeah, they could give a review of it. Yeah, review of their experience, so you would know what like a positive pharmacy would be and stuff like that. But then we were really involved in, you know, abortion rights and stuff like that, getting access for people to get the pill here, to have abortions and stuff. So we kind of went, and then it's so funny, like as we headed towards our 30s, it was like suddenly our attentions turned to pregnancy and miscarriage and motherhood. You know, it was kind of like a natural transition of that decade. So it felt kind of nice to end it. I'm sure
we no longer agreed with the morning after.
We had to atone
take
for
it back. Take the website down.
I'm sure we'll keep going every few years on some different age related issue or social issue that comes our way.
Menopause. Like,
but it felt nice to kind of actually bring that together and, you know, kind of put it out to the world for people to send in their experiences.
Why a zine as opposed to like a blog or something else? What was it about the format that you liked?
I think I'm a big zine collector. I have a lot of like punk zines and music zines and stuff like that. And I think it's really nice to have that kind of thing in your hand and to own it, to have it, you know, to be off the internet, especially with the lockdown when everyone, I certainly spent all my day doom scrolling. It would be nice to have a thing that you could hold and that people could send images in and pictures and stuff like that. And just the old-fashionedness of like posting it out, getting people's addresses and things like that just seemed kind of nice.
Yeah, I think definitely that you could hold it in your hand, that it was tangible, that's something that you could come across in your attic in 20 years' time. Whereas so much of actually even what we did for reproductive health, for example, is on the internet, on the cloud, you know, lost forevermore. It's just, it is nice to have something concrete, especially in these strange, surreal times. It just makes it a bit more real. Yeah.
And where did the name come from?
I guess I was a bit high still on the cacao and I was thinking about the name and I just, that poem, you know, come away, O human child, to the waters and the wild, you know, and I was thinking, yeah, that poem is really nice and it's kind of, it's a bit eerie, you know, it's about childhood and you're not quite sure, like the fairies are stealing the child. Is it kind of like the child's too innocent for the world, or is it a bit dark? Is it about death? Is it about, you know, imagination? And then waters and the wild also kind of really matches for me motherhood, because you've got the calm and the beauty and the rawness and then just the wildness of the feeling that you have. I was describing this the other day actually to Fiona and a few of our friends, that even, you know, how kind of intense you feel after you have a baby, that even in the moments where I wasn't quite sure if it was what I wanted and I was pretty sad and frustrated, I still had this animalistic protection feeling around the baby, where I would dream that I lived in some kind of like place that was really unsafe, or, you know, that I was living in a country where it was under attack or that something was happening, all these kind of mad things, and like all the things I would do to someone if they tried to get her. And she's just like asleep in the bed next to me, you know, in Dublin 7, like she's fine. But you had to get really wound up about all the steps you take to protect this baby when they're not under threat at all, luckily. So I think that's the kind of wildness as well, you know, that you transform into a person that you didn't know, but you come to know yourself again, and that's really nice, you know.
And how did you go about getting started then? So you just put it out there, what happened?
Yeah, we put it out there. I guess it probably was harder to get people who were parents to submit. I definitely hounded a few people I knew and they were like, yeah, but they were busy. And then afterwards they left me being like, oh, it's really nice, you should have asked me more. I was like, so it's because people are just busy and tired, and I get that, you know. But I think Fiona had, you were in a loss group online, weren't you?
Yeah, I was in a couple of pregnancy loss groups online for Irish women. Yeah, so I shared it there. We shared it on our own social media pages. So we got stories from men as well, as I said. So that was good. But yeah, just like, yeah, it was difficult to get contributions. But in the end, we actually, like, we ended up with probably a bigger zine than we had originally anticipated. But we took our time. Like, we started this project in July and we didn't publish it then until February, just gone, 2021. Yeah, February 1st in Bollock, Bridget's Day. So I think, yeah, it actually, it came at a really good time. Everything that in Bollock kind of signifies with regard to growth and cleansing and all of that kind of thing. And the spring just really tied in well with what we wanted to achieve. And even like the front cover is lovely, kind of spring flowers that our friend Rosie painted. So yeah, I think it just, yeah, came at a good time. So yeah, we got a good mix of contributions in the end on a lot of themes. So motherhood, pregnancy loss, fertility, fatherhood. So yeah, everything along the spectrum. As I said, you know, a lot of these issues aren't talked about an awful lot. It is getting a lot better, like a lot better quite quickly, actually. I've noticed even since I had the first miscarriage back in March 2020, I feel like things have got even better. But still, yeah, I think it was, for me actually, like I think it was about kind of creating something beautiful out of, for like for myself and out of loss. And that's kind of how I'd like to, that's how I'd like to approach a lot of things, to kind of create some sort of art out of the negative aspects, or what are perceived to be negative aspects of life. So yeah, so that's why I really wanted to get involved, and Eva asked me to join her on it, so I was delighted to.
Have you heard from anyone about their experience of contributing, and you know, what it felt like for people who maybe wouldn't usually share their experiences publicly to put together something for the zine?
Yeah, I think generally most people, especially people who were writing about loss, had said when they sent it in or when they got the copy, they'd messaged us to say it was great and they were so happy to be a part of it and to see all the other stories. I think people were probably a bit blown away that so many of their stories, particularly the loss stories, are just so common, you know, and that's not in a dismissive way, but just that it's unbelievable how often that happens to people, and yet it isn't something that, you know, we talk about here. And I think we've talked about this before, Fiona and I, around the whole 12-week rule, you know, and how people feel like they can't tell other people, and, you know, that they should wait till they get their scan, and just how hurtful that is, that whole process is, and what it suggests, you know. And if you did have a loss at 5 weeks or 6 weeks or 10 weeks, you know, you just have to keep it inside because you never told anybody in the first place. It just seems so awful a thing, you know. And I know I told everyone, not everyone, but my parents and stuff, when I found out, because I was so shocked, I just couldn't keep it in. And that was 7 or 8 weeks, and it never even dawned on me that it wouldn't turn into a baby, because I just hadn't, that just wasn't the world I was living in back then. You know, you spend most of your life trying not to get pregnant, so when it happens you think, oh, it's definitely happening. So yeah, we've kind of talked about that before. And a lot of, you know, the losses, some of them were as high as 17, 18, 20 weeks, and some of them were earlier. But the experiences were so similar.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, like there was definitely a sense of, this was a source of catharsis for me to write this. Even like some of the stories came from people that I don't think would actually write much at all, and they wrote really beautiful pieces. So I'm not sure if this will lead to them kind of, you know, looking to write stuff down as a form of catharsis into the future. But if so, that's brilliant. And I think like that's great that we're able to offer that forum. Not to say, because we all kind of have the sense that the internet is this, you know, place where everyone can have a say, and technically, you know, anyone can set up a blog tomorrow. But I think the fact that it was, you know, all of these stories in the one place, a tangible piece of paper that people could hold in their hands, I think that's really important, as opposed to saying just write a piece on Facebook about it, or, you know, write a blog post about it. And for people that wouldn't necessarily put themselves out there either, as you said, Linnea, like wouldn't necessarily feel comfortable putting the story out in a public forum without kind of been asked, like, so to have this opportunity to do it, I think was important for people.
There's something really nice as well, I think, about the fact that it's not a person deciding that I have an experience that I think other people should hear, so I'm going to go and pitch it somewhere, or I'm going to go and write a book. But it's like when you create a zine like this, it's almost, it's as much about the creation and the catharsis or whatever the process is of producing it, as it is about whoever holds it after it's out there.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing.
I think it's also really important to be able to, as people in general in our lives, like kind of reflect and create our own kind of narratives around experiences that we have, because so often that's taken away from you, especially when it's medicalized. And I think particularly when people have losses and they're grieving, but there isn't a funeral or a grave or anything like that, it's kind of good to have a memory or to really write something down and have something. It's kind of like a, like you say, something tangible to say, this happened to me and this was a person, this was my experience, and now it's here. You know, I mean, for me, I had such a terrible birth experience that in the moment, you know, when I was in labor and I had my own room and the salt lamp and everything was going pretty well for a while, I thought, this is great, I'm going to have her here. But then really quickly it was, you might have to have a section prepped up to the theater, bright lights, 16 people in the room, spinal block, can't feel anything, partner outside the room. Yeah. And that's how I had her. And I hate that, you know. So for me, like, I was, which is the piece I wrote, I was in hospital on Women's Christmas and I was reading, you know, poetry and stuff to myself as I usually do on Women's Christmas. And I was thinking, like, this, and she was just next to me and the room was really quiet and the wind was howling like in the window. And I just thought, this is how I want to remember bringing you into the world. This is my labor and I can recreate that myself because it's mine, you know. And I need to take, I don't want to have that memory, it happened, but that isn't what I want to remember. So for me, it was really good to write that down as kind of my own, kind of like the idea of writing down something nice that happened every month for the first few months when she was born, because all I can remember is negativity. For me, it's so healing to say Lanny's birth was that piece that I wrote. It was that feeling that I had in the middle of the night on January 6th instead of January 4th, you know, and that was me and her and the first time I felt connected to her. So I imagine it's like that for other people, you know.
So what's been the best thing or the main takeaway for the two of you with creating the zine?
I think it's just, I don't want to be repeating myself, but it's really just that spectrum of experience and really just respecting and being generous with people every step of the way. And I think maybe it's the same for other people or maybe not, but I definitely, because I never gave much thought to parenthood, I never really understood it, you know. I never paid much attention to it. I scanned over the articles that came up on the news feed and it just wasn't something that I'd experienced or that I thought I would experience anytime soon. Now I see it everywhere. It's kind of like when you're into something and then it pops up everywhere, and now I see it everywhere and I can see the whole coin. I have friends who want babies but can't have babies, you know, people like me who have surprise babies, IVF, and it's definitely made me feel differently to people in my life who I know haven't been able to have children. You know, I look at that experience so much, I suppose, with a lot more generosity than I used to, because I feel like I can understand, not understand how they feel, but from reading those pieces and from going through the experiences with Fiona, you know, I'm kind of like, wow, that's a massive chunk of people, you know, and they're silenced massively by society. And I cannot imagine how that feels, you know. And I think it makes me more generous towards, and equally when I see a mother on the street with three kids and she looks like she just really needs to lie down and have a coffee, I'm like, God, I feel you, you know. I think it's given me a different lens, I suppose. It's like, you never know what someone's going through when you meet them. You don't know what people in work are going through, what your friends are going through, you know, and this is a massive chunk that's happening.
I think for me, exactly the same as Aoife, but also what I said earlier about kind of creating something beautiful out of pain and loss. And look, like, it's a zine, like, we're not going to big it up for more than it is, but I think that's a really important, for me anyway, and probably for a lot of other people, it's an important and useful way to kind of go through life. And also just stigma busting, as Aoife said, that whole, just specifically with regard to pregnancy loss, the whole 12-week rule kind of thing. I think that can be quite damaging. And I had made that decision to wait until the 12 weeks myself, tell my parents, but obviously told them a bit earlier the second time, because I knew I'd want their support if it ended in loss. So I think that is a myth that needs to be busted, I suppose. For a lot of people, they do want to wait, and that's fine. But I think that's something that we should be questioning. Yeah, especially in Ireland, I think, where it's kind of keep your women's issues to yourself. You
totally
know?
Yeah,
it's definitely still a thing. So
when you're like, no, we're putting them in a zine.
Yeah. Exactly.
Another kind of lonely aspect of being left of centre, let's say, or kind of curious in things that are not mainstream, and being pregnant, is that you kind of fall between a really highly medicalised model that's the norm, where people, you know, go to the hospital and do everything the doctors say and don't question it and have very hospitalised, medicalised births, and then this kind of free birth movement, which definitely has a lot of positive aspects but isn't always helpful. Yeah. You know, I mean, I really did believe doing yoga and listening to music on YouTube, you know, and lighting a candle was going to mean that my birth went really well. And, you know, I kind of felt sometimes in those spaces when I did yoga or I was online in those spaces that, like, epidural was a dirty word, that they, you know, that birth interventions only happened, forceps, etc., if, you know, you had just done something wrong and the hospital was out to get you. And, you know, that's really unhelpful. I mean, I was had my full health. I was 28. I had done all the yoga, no health complications. And through no fault of anyone's, the baby just stopped moving in the direction she should have been moving. And I think I remember doing yoga at one point and the teacher kind of saying, you know, hug your bump, blah, blah, blah. Women have been doing this for thousands of years. And I thought, women have been dying for thousands of years. Yeah. You know, people die in childbirth less frequently now than they used to 200 years ago. But they always did. Just because something is natural doesn't mean that it's going to go straight forward and that we should reject every kind of medical intervention and say, oh, epidural, eye roll. I mean, I had done everything, quote unquote, right. And God knows what would have happened if I was birthing 100 years ago, you know, because the things just happen sometimes. The baby wasn't going in the right direction and I needed help. And unfortunately, that led to physical, you know, injuries and a recovery process. But I wouldn't for a minute. And I went through my birth reflection service in the coom. I went through my notes page by page with a really lovely midwife, and there was nothing different in my experience or my knowledge that could have been done. It was just very unfortunate. Everything was going really well until it wasn't. And I just find that kind of world, you know, of completely rejecting everything to do with medicalized birth, it isn't helpful at all, because it makes you feel like you must have done something wrong. You didn't do enough yoga, you didn't do hypnobirthing, and that's why it happened. Why people have babies in their sitting room floor and then they're fine. Why didn't that happen for me? I must be too anxious, you know. And that's, it's not helpful. So I think that's...
And actually, I think almost that it can have the opposite effect, because when you then end up in that situation where it goes from good to bad, or when something happens, those narratives are still playing on your mind, and the kinds of choices and decisions you make will be impacted by everything you've been told about what's good and not good. And actually, as you say, there are interventions that maybe can be done in a good way at the right time that can be really helpful. And if you're pushing against that, it can almost just lead to further complications and make things a lot worse.
Yeah, I totally agree. And that's why I think, like, when I say, and what I said earlier in the podcast, like, that I would be critical of the medical profession or questioning of it, I'm sometimes worried about saying that, because I feel like, because as Aoife said, it is presented as such a kind of polarized debate, you know, are you pro medical profession or are you anti the medical profession? And it's not about being pro or anti, it's about being critical, as I said, and it's about being informed, knowing that you have all of the correct information, that that women and men are informed of their rights, of medical knowledge as well, and then be allowed make that choice, which may or may not involve medical intervention or following what the doctor says or not following what the doctor says. And I just think that's the most important aspect. It's not saying that all doctors are evil, or it's not saying that hypnobirthing is a waste of time. It's saying you can take a bit from all of these aspects, and that you can build up your toolbox from an array of different sources, you know.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, it's earth mother or not earth mother kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm sure we could talk about stuff forever and ever,
yeah,
but
sorry,
that's not gonna help. That was Aoife Francis and Fiona Duncan on Bits of Me. You can read a digital version of their zine, Waters in the Wild, at waterswildzine.com and pre-order your own copy of the next print run. I'll put a link to the website as well as the zine Instagram in the show notes. This week, a special thank you to the patrons Leisha Kelly and Denise Dunn for being generous and kind and helping to keep the conversation going. If you can help, please go to patreon.com/bitsofme and sign up for early access to podcast episodes, monthly exclusive writing, and a Bits of Me badge. If you can't help that way, perhaps you'd take a second to subscribe to and review the podcast and share it on your socials, all of which is very much appreciated. Finally, you can follow Bits of Me on Instagram and Twitter. I'll link both in the show notes. Thanks for listening.